Well, it's another cold opening program this evening on the Horn. It is the 19th day of September 2019. HeadOn.live is where you find us on the interweb tubes. I got sound card problems, and, we've had them before. And for some reason or another, it gets kind of gremlin-y for playback for things like, intro and things like that. And so we don't have that right now. And odds are, won't have it tomorrow either, but we'll have, we got Skype, that works fine. And so Friday on the Front Porch is not in jeopardy. Calls to the program are not in jeopardy. I just don't have any playback on the fab machine right now. Thorn in the Side Thursday is firing on both cylinders, Mechanic Bob, says Brother Deacon Asa. That's a good thing. And so here we are. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude for our subscribers. This evening is no difference. Different. Thanks go out to James. And thanks go out to Joseph and Mike in Cascadia, Sharon, Joseph, and Catherine. Thank you all very kindly for being partial sponsors of the program this evening. That's very helpful indeed. The fundraising goal we're looking at this evening is at $460, and there's a total of $860 to be raised so that we can have a week of fundraising free radio. If we were to raise that by the end of tomorrow night, we would once again, for the second month, maybe the third month in a row, have actually 6 days, more than a week of fundraising free radio. So that's where it stands, $460 this evening. And if you want to help out, run over to contribute tab at headon.live, and we'll get right after that. Where to begin this evening? I know. The big story of the day is the espionage story, the fact that, that's not even a matter of surprise, is it? The fact that Donald Trump is a foreign asset, and it got weirder today because there was a closed door hearing. With the House Intelligence Committee, in which the National Intelligence Inspector General showed up and sort of testified, but wouldn't give up the details of exactly what was going on that created such a stir and such deep concern for the whistleblower to fear that Nitwit Nero was compromising our national security by his conduct. Or, I don't know, by his very existence, for that matter. And there's room to talk about that. And there's a lot of nuance that goes into that, I guess. But my heart, right now, my heart lies with working people. I've always been more on the working people side of things. And I don't much give a fuck what multimillionaires think. So, if you'll bear with me, and by the way, big thanks to Rico in DeBerg. Rico said, I want to put up a $50 challenge for tonight, and if it's met, I'll chip in another $50. Go Horn Community! Love and peace, Rico. Thank you, Rico. So that's on the table. If we get some folks to kick in $50, that we can take that $460 down to $310, which would be huge. So thank you, Rico. Thank you very kindly, and I'll update through the course of the program if folks respond to that, and I hope they will. But what I kind of wanted to – well, not no kind of. I wanted to start the program this evening talking about the GM strike. Because I was – Mike Elk over at Payday Report has been doing some great reporting on it. And I realized time was short. I even invited him on the program if he wants to talk about it a bit. I haven't seen yet if he's even seen my message. But if he does, he's welcome here. We've talked to Mike in the past. But the bottom line, I mean, it's been kind of busy this afternoon. Didn't see any headlines about the GM strike being over. It isn't, is it? as Sparky, who has folded space to become Man Cave, puts it, it's going to get nasty, Bob. Well, I think it already is nasty. Because, among other things, and here's why I wanted to talk about it. I've mentioned before on this program how sometimes we can't help talking about what everybody else is talking about. And the Donald Trump is a foreign asset story is what everybody is talking about. I haven't monitored every progressive broadcast today, but I monitored a lot of multi-billionaire for-profit media, and that was on the tip of everyone's tongue. And I'm not being critical. It's understandable. This is some scary shit. I mean, it's some unsettling stuff. We probably haven't... See, I'm talking about it. That's what it does. But most mornings, I wake up, my internal clock has a rooster in it, and cock-a-doodle-doo, about 10 minutes till 6. Probably has something to do with growing older. Or getting to bed at a decent hour, for that matter. But there I was at 15 till 6, 10 till 6 this morning, so I fired up the telescreen, because I wanted to see what was going to consume the interest of the multimillionaires there on my filthy morning habit as they went about the business of telling us what we were supposed to think mattered. And I watched probably 2.5 out of the 3 hours. And, you know, those multimillionaires who sit around that desk there, they can't be bothered to stay on set for the whole 3 hours, which kind of baffles me. You're paying me bajillions of dollars a year to do a 3-hour program where I don't even have to talk for a bunch of it, and in which there are enough commercial breaks to run off and pee in the corner if you absolutely have to, but they can't show up for the whole 3 hours. So usually, with my filthy morning habit, when you get to the 8 o'clock slot, the beginning of hour 3, it's just a rerun of 6 a.m. until they get back from their Lark's Vomit canapé and caviar breakfast or whatever it is multimillionaire media buffoons eat. But I was looking for something, and I was paying attention to something. And what I was looking for was some mention of the GM strike. Nope. Mm-mm. Now, granted, I gave up at about 8:28 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, but up until that point, there had not been a single mention. And it's entirely too much to ask to suggest that, former Deutsche Bank securities trader Stephanie Ruhle would give a fuck about working people. So there was that. But the bottom line is, as you well know, the United Auto Workers are on strike against General Motors because General Motors is doing everything they can to put the screws to the working people of the UAW. I mean, it's really hard to describe it any other way. We the people bailed out General Motors because, and I'm not complaining about that, because it would have been an economic disaster to just let General Motors die. No more Chevys, no more GMC, no more Cadillac. We lost Pontiac and Oldsmobile along the way. So that now if there is an Oldsmobile out there, it probably is your grandfather's Oldsmobile. Funny how those ad slogans can come around and bite you in the ass. But we the people saved General Motors, and part of the reason we the people saved General Motors wasn't because we were feeling particularly solicitous toward the millionaires and billionaires who are at the top of that food chain, but because we were far more concerned about the people who actually did the work of making General Motors General Motors, and the downstream folks who provide the parts and the components and... Right. And so now, because of how Barack Obama handled the economy as compared to, say, the cantaloupe Caligula, General Motors is, to say the very least, flush with cash. Randy in PA says, the Morning Joe Zoo Cruise, all at Panera Bread having breakfast. I think maybe I've been, we got one in Beckley, but it's not something I'm going to make a special trip for. I didn't even know they did breakfast. There's kind of a rustic French-ish place in Union Station in Washington, D.C. They do a very good breakfast, but you pay D.C. money for it. I could see Mika nibbling ever so delicately at a croissant at a place like that. But I really do figure I'm more for the Lark's Vomit canapes and the Wolf Nipple chips and the caviar on the cornflakes. Regardless, as opposed to irregardless, it's one of those language evenings. I had a note from Brother Deacon Asa earlier who said, if I hear some asswipe say based off of one more goddamn time, I'm gonna risk going to jail over it. I understand. Being a practitioner of the art of word knowing is not easy. And some of the usages you get on any day, if I hear one more person say they're going to hone in on something, ooh, I want to reach right through the telescreen and just grab them by the throat. Because I'm cranky that way. And we all know how I feel about could care less. Randy in PA says, yeah, they do breakfast at Panera. All the yuppies eat there. And their bear claws are all right. I will remember that if I'm anywhere near the Panera Bread in Beckley anytime that vaguely resembles breakfast. By the way, early arrivers in the chat room, Anatole, Jimmy, and Squeaky will be happy to greet you should you decide to wander by. And as previously mentioned, yes, longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, being a third stage guild navigator, has in fact folded space to become Man Cave. It's kind of cool in the Man Cave. As Sparky points out, they're already looking for scabs at GM facilities in Texas. And the in Texas part, also the in Tennessee part, raises another issue that perhaps we'll get to in relatively short order. But I give a lot more of a damn about what happens to working people in this country than I do what happens to a handful of billionaire hedge fund traders. Because as far as I'm concerned, they're all just Jeffrey Epstein's in waiting. They're not okay. And they're probably as up to no good as any other sociopath or psychopath. On the other hand, working people take it on the chin every day in this country. Our union membership is down on a nationwide basis. Our union membership is down below 10%, and if it weren't for the public sector unions, it'd probably be below 5%. Because there has been a generations-long, from the moment that the National Labor Relations Act was signed into law by Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the so-called business community of this country has been at war with the idea, the very idea of organized labor. And the Taft-Hartley Act ought to be high on the list of shit we need to repeal day before yesterday, because it is pernicious and it has a deleterious effect on the right of working people to withhold their labor in instances in which they are not happy. And if you cannot withhold your labor, and if you cannot as a group withhold your labor, the people doing the labor are by definition little more, if not precisely, indentured servants. So to loop this thing back around, there was not a goddamn word said this morning on anywhere. I even checked in with Allison Camarena and that other dude over on Chicken Noodle News, but they had sort of whatever little scintilla urus of credibility they have, they had flushed down the toilet the previous morning by bringing none other than Corey Lewandowski on to do an interview about what a liar Corey Lewandowski is. It had all the journalistic value of less journalistic value than an old school black and white test pattern. So it was crickets. The problem, though, was that there are thousands of people who are out of their health care. GM has shut them out, union auto workers, from their ability to go to the doctor when they're sick. And thanks to Mike Elk over at Payday Report, I got the opportunity to hear him interview a UAW GM worker talking about what it means to a family, to a UAW family, to have their health care canceled in the middle of their kids' chemotherapy treatment. Of course, corporations do this in America. It was several years ago when a coal company down the mountain from me that had a contract with the UMWA, a collective bargaining agreement, well, they decided to declare bankruptcy. They sashayed into bankruptcy court, told the bankruptcy judge that they couldn't afford to actually give the money back that they had withheld from the wages that were actually earned by the union miners for the purposes of pension and health care. And the judge let them just steal the money and fire all their employees and cancel their health care. And in one particular instance I was aware of, one union coal miner's health care was canceled out from under him while his wife was in the middle of chemotherapy for breast cancer. This is typical capitalist corporate behavior. This is a tactic where GM is concerned with the UAW to try to coerce and connive the UAW into bowing and scraping before General Motors and begging them to please let them come back to work for less money. GM, in the meantime, has been stockpiling parts and components. They're already using replacement workers, otherwise known as scabs, and people who desperately need their health care don't have it anymore. And for those of you who have never been on strike or been in a family that was involved with a strike pay doesn't go very far at all. But again, I'm a West Virginian, and I'm a student of sorts of labor history in this state. And so when I saw the report from Mike Elk about UAW workers losing their health care, well, it certainly was not a surprise to me. In fact, I thought back almost exactly 100 years. And in fact, more than 100 years. Every time a bunch of coal miners here in Appalachia would decide to stand up on their own hind legs and act like they were more important than a draft mule, the coal companies would, because they owned, for the most part, everything around them, the first thing they would do is they would throw the striking miners out of the coal company-owned housing that they rented from the coal company at exorbitant rates while mining coal. And for months on end and through bitter winters, miners' families would live in canvas tents in tent cities off of coal company land, trying to wait out the coal company. I mean, we're approaching the 100th anniversary of what's called the Battle of Blair Mountain and the 100th anniversary of the so-called Matewan Massacre. That's a detailed and nuanced discussion about when it's right and when it's right to take up arms and what one can expect by way of a response. Blair Mountain is still dotted with machine gun pillboxes that were set up by the federal government to gun down miners who tried to withhold their labor from the coal companies. And so when I saw that they had the UAW workers had had their health care taken away from them, I immediately recognized the same corporate mindset that said, fuck them women and children, throw them out on their ass, we own those houses, 100 years ago. Or the mindset that put an armored railroad car with plate armor on it and gun slits in it, and ran it up Paint Creek and called it the Bull Moose Special and opened up with machine gun fire on one of those tent cities. I wish this country had as much knowledge of the history of working people's struggles in this country as, say, they know about the quarterback rating of their favorite professional football team's starting quarterback, or the ERA of their favorite baseball team's best pitcher, or the lineup of who's on Dancing with the Goddamn Stars. But we don't. And I've heard for years and years and years, well, and you hear it down south in particular, well, you know, once upon a time, unions had their place. But we're past that now. Things are so much better. We don't need no union. And so 100 years after miners were thrown out of their homes, UAW workers have been thrown out of their health care. And General Motors, frankly, doesn't give a tinker's damn. Sparky's a union man. Longtime inside wireman with the IBEW. Union people tend to know their, or at least used to, know their union history. They know why they pay the dues. They know what the dues do. They know why it's necessary to have political committees, and why it's necessary to have candidates who will support working people as opposed to corporations. And by the way, that delineation happens to fall pretty squarely Democrats versus Republicans. Finding a pro-labor Republican in the Congress of the United States right now is right up there with finding a liberal Republican. You might as well look for a leprechaun riding a unicorn, because they're entirely imaginary. But here we are in 2019, and lo and behold, nah, you still need a union. Badly. And so the temperature will go up on this, the bad blood will rise, and because of things like Taft-Hartley, other unions won't be able to engage in what's called wildcat action. Taft-Hartley, among other things, makes illegal sympathy strikes. Oh, it's a nasty piece of business. But tucked into all of this is an issue that I would like to hopefully put to bed. Or, well, I wish could be put to bed. We're not going to put anything to bed here because we don't have quite that much reach. Now, if everybody in this family community congregation were to act and start spreading the word, it could have an impact. And of course, we never know who's listening to the program, for that matter. But it's this. You know, back before the UAW went out on strike during the pageant last week, if you watched it, you would have heard some milquetoast Democratic presidential candidates saying things like, "Well, I don't know if we need Medicare for all, because, well, like union workers, they've worked hard for their union health care plans, and well, we wouldn't want to take those away from them because that's part of their agreements with their employers." Nah, Medicare for all wouldn't want to take health care away from anybody, especially not when employers are willing to do it before there's ever any kind of a replacement. Hi, GM. This is going to sound a little bitter, and it's probably not well considered on my part, but the behavior of GM in this situation is sufficient to make me wonder if we did the right thing by bailing them out. As Brother Deacon Asa puts it, corporations are people, my friend. Yes, they are. Very vicious and sadistic people. So true. So, it seems to me that if the messaging were remotely honest, the still way too many Democratic candidates at this point in time would look at the GM United Auto Workers Union members who don't have health care and say, "Ha! So much for that really awesome Cadillac union health care. Don't count for much if you get into a disagreement with the company, does it?" Doesn't matter for beans. And so I was talking with Boss Man Wayne earlier today when he was talking about hearing from some head of some firefighters union who said, "Well, you know, you've got to take into account our very special and unique health care." And Boss Man Wayne, who is a decidedly Medicare for all, said, What doesn't he understand about for all? Well, here's one of the dirty little secrets. There's a big difference between the union rank and file and the caviar on cornflakes leadership of said unions. Because what happens is high-ranking labor leaders get to live high on the hog, and they sit on pension and health insurance boards, and they're handsomely rewarded for doing so. And they negotiate health care plans and whatnot. But there's not a union in this country that isn't seeing their health care costs, which they pay as a percentage of their hourly rate, go up every year. If we had honest broker members of the multi-billionaire for-profit media, the whole we can't afford Medicare for all debate, phony as it is in the first place, would be over as of right fucking now, yesterday. Because I don't care how good your health care is, if your employer can take it away in order to leverage you into subservient compliance, it's not worth having. Here, let's put it this way. If we had Medicare for all, the United Auto Workers, when they walked out on strike, would not have lost their health care. It's that simple. And so even Mayor Pete Buttigieg's new plan announced today, Medicare for all who want it. Well, you reckon this is any kind of a wake-up call for whoever they are out there? I just love my employer health care. I love it. I got a teddy bear named Union Health Care, employer-provided health care, and I snuggle it and smolic on it every night before bed. Because I still can't find those people. And members of the Horn Family Community Congregation write in and say, I've had health care, through the union, and it was certainly no better than what Medicare for All would be. But all you hear in the for-profit media is that, oh, we're going to take health care away from 150 bajillion, gazillion, contrillion, hard-working Americans. How stupid do they think we are? Is there anybody out there who really thinks that what we're going to do is we're going to kick everybody off their health care and wait until we can get Medicare for All up and running? Because that's ludicrous. Nobody in their right mind would advocate for that. 1 minute you got health care, the next minute you don't, and hey, Medicare for All will kick in sometime. Hey, that's just stupid. But that's what's being peddled to the American people, who are a hell of a lot more worried about dancing with the stars than they are the well-being of the republic. And because they don't know much, they will swallow whatever they are told by the millionaires who sit in front of cameras and yap at them day in and day out. Never asking for a moment, what do I have in common apart from my presence on this little planet with a millionaire. And I don't care who the millionaire is. I don't care if it's one of the millionaires over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, or one of the millionaires at Chicken Noodle News. I think I read somewhere that Anderson Cooper's salary is like $11 million a year. Now, not to sound like an asshole or anything. Okay, well, whatever.
Bob, stop telling us when you don't mean to be an asshole. We know better.
If you're Anderson Cooper, maybe work for 5 years. You got 55 mil. You're paying next to none of that in taxes. Go do something. Be a sculptor. Design Vanderbilt Jeans 2.0 in memory of your loving mother. What does any single human being need with $55 million? And what's more, how can anybody who's yanking down $11 million a year think that they've got a single goddamn thing in common with somebody who makes decisions about whether to buy food or medicine? With somebody who can't afford to send their kids to a school where they won't get shot. You know, moments like this bring out my whole workers of the world unite, you have nothing to lose but your chains urges. And then there's the other question. There's the other question that I alluded to earlier toward the beginning of the broadcast. In places like Maury County, Tennessee, you know, that GM plant there started out life as the Saturn plant. State of Tennessee built a lovely little four-lane spur highway from Interstate 65 over to Spring Hill. And it was the Saturn Parkway. And then Saturn belly flopped. When I mentioned no Pontiac and no Oldsmobile, no Saturn. But the plant was sitting there, and there was something they could do with it. And so it became a GM assembly plant for some vehicle or another. I don't know which one right off the top of my head. And it is peopled with folks from the surrounding region and some transplants from elsewhere. But it's Tennessee. I mean, I know that region well. Anytime I go to my old hometown in Alabama, I drive right past that plant and down through Columbia, Tennessee, and on down Highway 43 toward the Alabama state line, past the Mennonites in their buggies near Lawrenceburg, Tennessee. Oh, those little Mennonite ladies do make some of the best fried pies, mercy sakes. But there's an inescapable fact that you have to take into consideration, just like you have to take it into consideration here with like United Mine Workers members in West Virginia. If any less than half of those United Auto Workers members in Tennessee voted for Nitwit Nero, I would be damned well surprised. I would not be at all surprised if 75% of them voted for Nitwit Nero. And so when they get screwed, under a regime run by a person who told them all along that he had every intention in the world of screwing them. How much sympathy can you generate for that? It's like the difference between somebody who drops a sledgehammer on his big toe, smashes his big toe, and walks around with a and it hurts like fuck, and walks around with a limp for a long time afterward because he's got a busted big toe. You look at that guy and go, God damn, that must have hurt when that sledgehammer fell on his big toe. On the other hand, if you've got a guy and you watch him sit down, take his shoes off, take his socks off, stand back up, put one foot up on the stoop, grab the sledgehammer, and bash his own fucking toe, how much sympathy do you have? See, I have this troublesome long memory. And part of that troublesome long memory is remembering back, you know, back before he'd even secured the nomination, when Nitwit Nero was still debating low energy Jeb and little Marco Rubio. When asked a question about the minimum wage, Chlamydia Claudius responded,
American working people are already making too much money. And we don't need unions. Unions are bad for business.
I mean, it's on the record. Don't take my word for it. Go out and search it. You can find it. It really happened. But a certain element of people heard him talking about Mexican rapists, and they didn't hear anything after that. They heard him talking about blocking all Muslims from coming to America till we could figure out what the hell's going on. And they didn't hear anything after that either. They only heard the dog whistles to their own ignorance and bigotry. Like here in West Virginia, the United Mine Workers just heard,
Obama war on coal. Obama hates coal. Obama hates you.
And they never noticed the 1990s Playboy interview where venereal Vespasian said,
I'd like to think that if I'd been born the son of a coal miner, I would have had more creativity, more imagination than to just go and be a coal miner like my dad.
Because he said that too. And man, they ran. They sprinted to the polls. They didn't walk. They didn't amble. They didn't shamble. They didn't crawl. Baby, they hustled to the polls to vote for somebody who hated their goddamn guts. So in a way, I think it would be beneficial, as this thing continues, when these folks are interviewed, to just ask them, oh, by the way, I mean, liberals and progressives are behind you 100%, but tell me something. Did you vote for Donald Trump? Tell me true. Got a Bible right here. Put your hand on it. Stick the other hand in the air and tell me, did you vote for Donald Trump? Will you ever vote for that motherfucker again? Because their problem isn't just with the UAW. It is with the Republican Party that stands four square behind them as they go about the business of trying to break the union. And God Almighty, if they succeed in breaking the union, it's kind of like what I've said before. Even if I had the money, I would never buy an automobile. And I just went through the buying an automobile thing. It's not pleasant. I would never buy an automobile that was built in one of these right-to-work states by one of these foreign corporations who pay shit wages to the people who work in them and located there specifically so they could pay shit wages and shit on the people who work there. That includes BMW in South Carolina. That includes Mercedes-Benz in Alabama. That includes Volkswagen in Tennessee and Hyundai and Kia. If the damn thing was built by somebody who did not have a collective bargaining agreement, I don't trust the automobile. And please bear in mind, when it comes to automobiles, I'm a Deutschophile. I love German automobiles. But I don't love German automobiles that weren't built by German workers who have real carved-in-stone labor protections. Shit, Volkswagen builds cars in Mexico and Brazil. My rusty red pickup truck from eons ago that got totaled by one of the local pillheads, I adored it, but it was assembled in Mexico. I have absolutely nothing against the Mexican people. In fact, I have a great deal of regard and respect for them. But there's only one reason that companies go places like that, and it isn't because of the degree of expertise. It is because of the opportunity to stiff workers on money. And by the way, another loop back. Would this strike be going on if we had Medicare for All? Would UAW workers be having to fight for their very lives via their health care coverage? Perhaps they'd be on strike, but health care would not be an element of their grievances. So I just thought all of this was worth bringing up, because the whole news cycle has been consumed with another story. And any time the news cycle gets consumed with a different story, you know damned good and well that something else is going begging. Dave writes, the millionaire for-profit media types who are really hip will have banana splits topped with gold leaf. An endangered species moose. That's where you blend all kinds of exotic, hard-to-get and rare meats into a paste, and you don't put it in the casing, so you can't call it sausage. I prefer my world-famous chili for breakfast, but I'm just weird that way, says Dave, writing from the blind. Kyle says, corporate CEOs and business owners can't allow us average American workers to have any rights when it comes to our work. They need to keep the wages down so they can afford to pay for that fourth vacation home and that fifth yacht. But seriously, when the hell are we going to take back the rights that we should already fucking have? And quit letting them hit us over the head and push us around. A coworker of mine recently got a job offer to work in a factory for $20 an hour, which would have been a decently substantial raise for him, and also up to 4 hours overtime per day at time and a half. So pretty good offer. However, he had to turn the job down because the job didn't offer health insurance. The fuck is so hard to figure out about this? Employers can use health insurance over the heads of employees, and they can't do a fucking thing about it. With Medicare for All, if we were like every other civilized country, my coworker could have taken the job with better compensation without hesitation. This shouldn't be so fucking difficult. And, of course, the American auto manufacturers would be far more competitive if we had Medicare for All. No problem, says Labor Man. Rush will tell them it's all Obama's fault. No shit. Les with a note says, I grew up in a union household, both parents. Dad was Communication Workers of America. Mom was PEF. I'm an independent trucker, but I support all unionization. That being said, I bought a Chevy Volt 2 years ago, and now I'm in a conundrum of driving a car I love made by a company I now despise. I'm contemplating removing the Chevy bow tie off the front and back of the car and replacing it with a Union Strong bumper sticker. Fuck GM. I hope they fail again and have to crawl on their knees to Congress under a Sanders-Warren administration. Let's really make it Government Motors for real. Part of the reason I bought the car I did was when I realized that it was union-built somewhere in Illinois. And so since it was union-made somewhere in Illinois, I felt like I had a fighting chance that more than half the people in that factory hadn't voted for Tangerine Tiberius. I know, maybe that's just asshole-ish of me, but why do I have to get over it and they don't? He's the one fucking up the country. Why don't they have to apologize? Why don't they have to have their heads shaved and walk through the middle of the town square? Don't blame me. I voted for Clinton. Have you noticed how there aren't any of those bumper stickers out there? Because you'll get your tires knifed. Yeah, that's an interesting point, Brother Deacon Asa. Ever notice how fascist pigs never try to bust police unions? No, they don't. And the police unions are gratefully obsequious into the bargain. David in South Carolina stands says, auto workers. He opposed the auto bailout, too, yet auto workers voted for Donald Trump as well. Oh, yeah, he pissed and moaned and screeched and squealed about the auto bailout. And let's remember, too, that Bishop Willard Romney stood in front of a TV camera and told the whole country that he would happily let General Motors and Chrysler go straight to hell because free market. David adds, Boeing in South Carolina. I would not want to fly on one built here. And what are we finding out? Yeah, that Boeing 757 MAX that has a hard time being an airplane instead of a corkscrew. Reckon those were built in South Carolina? I do seem to recall reading that they were. At the Spring Hill plant, Ron tells us GM builds the Cadillac XTS and the Acadia SUV and will add a third vehicle despite the $6 billion cost-cutting plans. The third vehicle will probably be another Cadillac. Yeah, if I had that spaceship kind of money, I would. I'd go shopping for maybe a Mercedes-Benz or a BMW or a Porsche. But I'd look them square in the eye and say, unless you can tell me this damn thing was built in Germany by German workers, I ain't touching it. You'd be surprised how many German cars that lets out of the equation. Oh, was this? That was 737 MAX. Yeah. Thanks, Sparky. You know, Mazdas. You know, there's no telling where a Toyota's built or a Nissan. But a Mazda is built in Japan by Japanese workers with employment protection. But I'm happy with what I did get. I'm happy it was built in Illinois. Seems to be nice and solid. And I was looking at the specs on the Lincoln version of that thing. and the Lincoln version has an available V6 twin-turbo power plant. Shit! That thing's probably a rocket. Probably achieve escape velocity in that thing. As to sympathy strikes, Flavio says sympathy is a word in the dictionary between shit and syphilis. Elsewhere, they're known as solidarity strikes, the recognition that you're stronger, more solid, together. My point was the fascist pigs know how to divide and conquer very well. QV, Scott Walker, and Act 10. And, hey, we're almost done with the first hour of the program, and I need to send thanks out. Thanks very kindly to Samson. Thank you very kindly. And let me see here. Yeah, thank you to Samson, and earlier in the day, thank you to James. Thank you very kindly. So, Rico in DeBerg's Come On Horn Family Challenge has been met. That takes us down to 310. 310 as we approach the end of fundraising for the month of September. Thank you, Samson. Thank you so much. And now if folks want to jump in, if we raise another $110, that'll get us to this evening. We will be done with fundraising for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Uh-oh. Hashtag not all Mazdas, Bob. I'll be damned. The Flat Rock Assembly Plant in Michigan. Darn it. Oh, well. Wonder what they're building there. I can't really spend time opening the link there. What do they build there, Brother Deacon Asa? Just so I can be on the lookout. So if you've got any opinion or any thoughts on that issue, I welcome it. Arnold, deeply pro-labor, says GM's a pile of shit. Greatest vehicles on the road at one time. Absolutely disgraceful now. Arnold knows because Arnold can disassemble and rebuild an engine with one hand tied behind his back. As far as the union bosses, they're just the same as corporate bosses. $400,000 and $500,000 a year salaries. The top 1% of management and or leadership are overpaid and usually worthless. On the other hand, Medicare for All means that union workers could get as much as $24,000 a year back in wages. That's a lot of scratch. A whole lot indeed. Albert says, Bob, a reporter needs to ask Dope 45 if he's ever owned an American-made car. Has he ever owned a car? Can the stupid fucker even drive? I don't recall ever seeing him drive. I mean, yeah, we've seen him in the cab of a truck pulling on an imaginary horn. And saying,
my mother used to say to me, you love trucks, don't you, Donald? And I said, oh, I do, I do.
I don't recall ever seeing any reportage that says that intellectually disabled individual ever had an operator's license. Apparently those Mazdas are now assembled in Colombia. Okay. So that gets us to the top of the hour. And again, I don't have playback, but if you want to call in on the stress line works just Jim Dandy. And that, of course, is 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. Get you right into the program. Did I miss anything? Is there anything lacking in that analysis? Is there any way to argue that Medicare for All would not be the solution to a hell of a lot of problems? Is it structurally impossible to implement Medicare for All in such a way as to make sure that nobody loses coverage anywhere, anyhow, anyway? Because that doesn't seem like it's on a par with putting a human being on the moon. I know, we can't do it now. We've lost that ability. But we did it once. We did it once a lot of times. And I got to think that something as earthbound as setting it up so people can go to the doctor when they're sick isn't quite as complicated. Ron in Raleigh says, how about the fact that Uber now says that the drivers are not, I repeat, not a core part of their business? They'll say or do anything not to be able to not treat their workers fairly. Yeah, that's a fact. California passed a law that says that Uber drivers, gig economy workers, are in fact employees, because they fit the definition of employee. Right to control the details of the work. That sort of thing. And Uber doesn't have self-driving automobiles yet. Not by a long shot. So with 3:10 to go to finish the evening, let's run over and check in with Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty doggone good, I think. How about you?
Well, I'm actually doing quite well. I had a hell of a workout. I swam this morning, my definition of swimming is, I actually didn't panic in the deep end. I'm taking swim lessons. And
well, you're past the definition of swimming being not drowning, right?
That part, yeah. I didn't sink like a rock. So I'm just having that issue with, matching the breathing with the stroke. But I'm getting better. I don't panic in the deep end. So this morning I did a upper body strength workout. I did a foam rolling workout. I did a stretching. I ran a mile and a half. I did the equivalent of 3 laps in the pool. A combination of, I would swim so far and stop and then continue and then, back and forth. So, it's coming along. It's just a work in progress. I just got to practice.
To go back to our Joe Biden clip from earlier in the week, you'll be a veritable Esther Williams in no time flat.
Yes. I do wear a swim cap so as to not get the pomade in the water.
Well, I'm so glad. I didn't know you were a pomade kind of girl, but
Well, actually, it's coconut oil because I do wear dreadlocks. Well, no, we don't call them dreadlocks. We call them mocks. So yes, so I have to wear coconut oil in my hair.
Yeah, but that's not the same as your fop or your dapper Dan.
No. Or what's this? Dax. So yeah, no, it is so not the same. It's a combination of coconut oil and some other essential oils and stuff like that to keep the chlorine for drying my hair the fuck out of my hair, and some tree swim conditioning spray and stuff like that. It's a process. It is a fucking process. Because, I don't want my hair to dry out. Because, it will really fuck up black hair. Well, chlorine will fuck up anybody's hair, but my hair in particular. I'm getting into a routine. So I'm beginning to really enjoy the swimming, and this is like kind of like the first kind of full week of swimming that I've done. So, I'm looking forward to seeing, if there's going to be any significant weight loss, because tomorrow is a weigh-in day. So we shall see. So I'm listening, I was listening to you earlier about the DM thing. And speaking of things that the millionaire multimedia, millionaire media groups are saying, has anybody covered the fact that Jeff Bezos cut the medical benefits for his part-time workers at Whole Foods?
I saw that. I hadn't touched upon it.
Yeah, that part too. And that was one of the big things for a lot of people who worked at Whole Foods, the fact that they had benefits, even though they weren't part-time.
Now, by comparison, check me, but don't employees at, say, places like Costco and Trader Joe's, don't they have health care?
Yes.
So it's not impossible. It doesn't run you out of business.
No.
Jeff Bezos, the richest man in America, but he can't he can't afford to make sure that his workers can go to the doctor.
As a matter of fact, I wish, and I think I meant to send you that article so you can touch upon it, because somebody did a comparison, analysis rather, as to how much it would cost him compared to how much he makes in like a second. And basically, for how much it would cost him for these people, the part-time people, to keep their health care, it would have cost him basically for what he would make in maybe an hour. Literally, basically an hour. I mean, I could be wrong, but basically what he would make in an hour is how much it would cost for these people to keep their health care for a year.
Jesus.
Yeah. It was some really minute amount of money that it would cost him personally. And then also the article reminded us that he pays no money in income tax, his corporation or whatever. That part too.
Jesus.
Yeah.
You know what? If we wanted to, we the people could have a government that would stop that shit.
That part too.
It can be done.
It can be done. Because before Jeff Bezos bought Whole Foods, it was considered one of the, even though, who owned it before? Wasn't he a libertarian asshole? But even without being a libertarian asshole, he did take care of his employees, for what I understood.
Right, I know who you're. Yeah, but I can't come. Right.
But he, and Whole Foods was really one of the, from what I understand, a pretty damn good place to work. Even if you worked there part time, you still got benefits. I mean, one of my very first jobs, well, my second real job, because third or whatever, when I first came home from school, I was a cashier at Ralph's. And even though I worked part-time, because it was a union job, local USCW, local 770, I had full benefits. When I was pregnant with Well, Alex, you know how much it cost me to when I had Alex at the hospital? And I was in the hospital not for one, but two, or 3 days after I had Alex. You know how much it cost me to deliver him and stay in the hospital for 3 days, Bob? $0, Bob, zero, nothing. You know how much my prescriptions would cost me when I have to go and get a prescription, Bob?
Is that another copay? Is that another nothing?
$2, Bob.
Damn.
$2. That was for my prescription. Now, granted, that was 30-some-odd years ago, but, you know, I mean, my copay that actually goes to the doctor, Bob? Oh, yeah, that was no copay to actually go to the doctor. Dental, no copay, unless it was something really crazy, that, you know, but checkups, billings, you know, stuff like that. No, no copay.
And vision. You know, that's another thing that goes away with the advent of Ronald Reagan. You know, one of these days we really should dig him up and scatter his bones to the four corners of the empire.
Well, you know, that, because I keep trying to remind people, because I was talking to, my young charge, Will, you know, we go over California history every so often, and I was telling him about how, and even his mother didn't know why would she have to know this, because, you know, she grew up with money, and there's no ding on her, because she's a really good person. She didn't even know, because, you know, her parents paid for her to go to school, so she didn't even know that once upon a time, before Ronald Reagan, if you're a California resident, yeah, you go to a UC or Cal State, they're yelling!
Yep.
Oh, I'm sorry, was I yelling?
No, but that's another thing, that's another thing Ronald Reagan destroyed.
Mm-hmm. And he was Governor Reagan. So, yeah, that part.
Well, hey, I want you to know that you got fan mail. Darlene.
Already?
Yeah, Darlene in Connecticut. Of course, a founding member of Queen Tracy's
charter River.
Charter member of the Reverse Oreo Society. Said, I think it's fantastic what Tracy's accomplishing with her exercising and physicality. It's clear she's a physically powerful woman with a great deal of endurance. I wish I could do a quarter of what she's doing. Good on you, Tracy. Keep on trucking.
Thank you, Darlene. You know what? I am so, my goal, I mean, if I make it, hopefully I will. And I just may make it, because at this point, I will see by Friday how much I weigh. But Bob, if things go as they have been going, I just may end the year, I might end 2019 under 200 pounds. It just may happen. That would be the first time. I don't remember the last time I was under 200 pounds. It's been so long. I don't remember the last time I was under 200 pounds. I do not. I cannot. Yesterday, I went, two friends of mine had an impromptu wedding, and Jan and I went. Their story is really sweet. They met, one of them was actually married to somebody else when they met. Cute. But it was more of a marriage of convenience. But Jan and I, it was so funny, when they met, they came to a party. And when Jan and I saw them, we saw sparks, and I'm like, we knew that there was something there before they knew that there was something there. And that was 5 years ago. And pretty much they got married 5 years, almost like 5 years to the day when they first met yesterday. And so, and when, you know, and here's the thing, the good news is the woman that the other girl was married to, she actually helped throw the wedding. So they're all still friends. Me, personally, I don't know if I would be that chill, if my ex-wife was marrying somebody else, and she got involved with somebody, another woman while she was still married to me, I don't know if I would be that chill, but, you know, whatever. But anywho, it was a sweet ceremony, but...
Nice.
It was just beautiful to see two black women celebrate black love. Yes, I'm married to a white woman, yes, but it was just wonderful to see black love. Because I don't see black love celebrated that often. So, and especially black queer love. So it was a very cute ceremony, and I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I heard it. It must have been, because I can't remember the last time I heard you use the word cute.
I don't use that word often. No, I don't. So yeah, so it was very sweet, and both of them to see. How they use spirituality and Christianity and the joining of, because Patrice is an American and Angeline is from Jamaica. And so now they got to go through the whole thing of getting her here, you know, the whole citizenship and naturalization and the scary part is now because of who is the president, and of course because Angeline is from Jamaica is it's a shithole country. So yeah, so now they got to contend with all that, and hope to God that November of next year he's gone, so the process will go smoother by then, but we shall see. But it was a very sweet, very wonderful ceremony, and the vows were wonderful. Like I said, it's not often, especially with things, the way things are going on now, it was a respite from the bullshit that we have been experiencing for the last, for how many years? He's only been office for
since January 20th, 2017. It will be 3 years this January.
Why does it seem like it's been 100 years?
We're at 2 years and 8 months tomorrow.
Okay. Speaking of queer black love, how far are you into Pose? Have you gotten any further from
No, that's
I know you've been crazy busy.
Yeah, that's a this weekend thing. We're just going to cave up and Pose.
Okay, good. We do
a lot of our viewing toward the end of our day, and.
Okay.
And you know, when we watched the first season, we did that in one long binge on a Sunday so that we were okay by bedtime.
Okay.
We watched those first couple of episodes, and I'm afraid if we start doing it at bedtime, we're going to be all either sniffly or pissed off trying to fall asleep. And given the fucking dreams that I have, I'm trying to teach my brain. I watched another movie last night. I have no idea where it came from. There were owls and eagles and creepy things with eyes poking out of holes in the ground. I mean, so you see my point.
Okay. Yeah. No, we can't. No. We can't. Your brain works like mine, so you got to be very careful about what you watch. And I've been very good, though. You know, I've gotten out of the habit of watching TV in bed. I now, you know, when I go to bed, I watch TV in the living room, and the TV does not go on in the bedroom. That's why Jed and I have to sleep in separate rooms now, because she refuses to turn off the TV at night. So, and besides, I'm up at, you know, 3:30, 4 o'clock. So, like, when, you know, I text you knowing that you're up at 6 a.m., you know, 4 to 6 a.m. East Coast time, I'm awake at the same time on the West Coast, and you sit, and you're like, what the fuck are you doing awake? And I'm like, because I'm awake. And so, because I'm usually at the gym, you know, by 5 a.m.
Yeah.
You know, my time. And so it's, you know, so I, you know, I just go to bed because I, and the last week, and I noticed because last week I was having such a kind of a fucked up week, and I was going to, and I was falling asleep with the TV on. I was falling asleep on the couch with the TV on, and then I was falling asleep with the TV on in my bed, in the bedroom, and I was having fucked up dreams. And I'm like, uh-huh. So I realized that, I'm like, see, when I just go to bed and turn off, no TV, just get up and go to bed, I don't have fucked up crazy ass dreams. I just go to sleep. And seriously, as soon as my head hits the pillow, I'm out. I am absolutely,
yeah,
out.
That's where I run into trouble. I'll read usually, because that's better than, you know, like TV right before sleep. But I'll read a little bit, and, you know, I'll get to that part where the words begin to swim on the page, so I know, ah, cool, we can turn the lights out now. And then the lights go out, and my brain comes on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not insomnia per se, because I'll go to sleep, but damnation, the dreams. And they're not necessarily nightmares. They're seldom nightmares. They're just way too fucking interesting. And so,
they're not nightmares either. They're just strange, and it's like they're like watching a damn movie.
Yeah, that's what I call them. I call them mind movies. And I told Agnes, I said, you know, it's not just that I'm sitting there watching the mind movie. My brain is generating a dream, and some other part of my brain is thinking about the dream that my brain is generating. So there's like two or three layers of aggravation going on.
It's when you're smart, like you are, and I'm not saying that I'm as smart as you are. Well, I don't know, but when you have a lot that you think of, and you have a lot that I think about, and so it's hard to, you know, because your brain is constantly going. And so when you kind of try to shut your brain off, you can't.
Well, it's as much as I like the work that Lawrence does on MSNBC, I can't do it because I'll be laying there, front leg staggering, not pull, frazzle, lacking, and then sleep. No.
No. My day to day, I'm just trying desperately not to kill people, and I'm trying not to just trying to keep from, you know, running people over in the street. Yesterday, it's so funny. You know, remember how you were talking? Did we just talk about it amongst ourselves? Or did you talk about the whole Birdie thing about, you know, how his book about when he, you know, kept talking about Ginger, and then we the book was reprinted, and instead of apologizing about
that was off air. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, I don't know if you crank it up to, or crank it up. I don't know if you chalk it up to being an almost 80-year-old man set in his ways or whatever. You know, the excuse that was given by his spokesflack that he was critiquing racism. You know, you can read the passage there, and it's like, no, that's not a critique of racism. That's a gratuitous word, use of that word.
Right. Well, see, I was reading, you know, but not so much about him, the gratuitous use of the word and critiquing racism, but the article that you sent me about the book, and I read about, you know, what about the apologists. Of how people like him and other white people are excusing white people for being racist and saying how, well, they wouldn't be racist if it wasn't for the, you know, the money people, you know, saying, I can't really remember how, but they're, I'm tired of people using, you know, saying that if it wasn't for like the landowners and the plantation owners and the factory owners and all this, then there wouldn't be no such thing as racism. But that's not true.
Well, I mean, there is truth in the fact that the plantation owners and whatnot used race as a wedge to divide.
And
the thing is, the point that Bernie was making in his book is similar to a point that Elizabeth Warren made, but Elizabeth Warren made it with a direct reference to a quote from Dr. King. And that's
yes,
all.
About,
and that's
about,
all. And,
like you said about Jim, but they fed on it.
At least for once, it's not the United States. But Canada is embroiled now in its own brown face scandal.
Oh, our boy Justin Trudeau. Yes.
And but at least
that
he didn't,
part.
At least there was no gamesmanship about. Well, I can't. You know, like Kay Ivey, the governor of Alabama. Well, I honestly can't remember that I did blackface. But goodness me, I'm sure sorry about it if I offended anybody. None of that bullshit. That Republican non-apology. And you don't have the Ralph Northam
right.
thing of, well, I can't remember if I'm the one in the Klan suit or the guy in the blackface. We don't have that. Justin Trudeau at least owned it straight up and said he loves costume parties. And, yes, he went to an Arabian Nights costume party when he was a teacher or whatever, 29 years old. And he's there for all the world to see. And he said, yep, that's me. And he's got, and you know, basically he's doing a brown-faced Aladdin. Because I guess he's a little too white and a little too Canadian just to put the headgear on and sing a song from the Disney cartoon or something.
Well, there's also a picture back in the day of Joy Behar. And her being a... Nobody brought that shit up either. With her, you know, being a brown... You know, and her... being dressed us up in brown face. And I'm like, why do white people even, that's a four hour show
all of its own. Why do white people ... Yeah.
Why? Oh, and then the thing that I sent you about this, the Dutch doing the St. Nicholas parade, in blackface.
Yeah.
And they don't understand why that's a problem. I just...
Well, you know what? You know what I got a bigger problem? You know what I got a bigger problem with right now, Tracy?
What?
And this is, you know, this is from your own beloved California.
Oh, no. What do we do now?
And, of course, it's privileged white people. Because it's another one of those moments, you know, with the Captain Picard meme with the not this shit again.
What?
Big old demonstration.
And by the way, I did know that Jesse Lee was from. I know he's from L.A. I knew that. I just didn't want to claim it. But go ahead.
Trying to forget it. Trying to slip that one past us, aren't you? Yeah, I know you.
I knew. I just didn't want to claim this monkey ass.
You did not.
Yeah, I called him a monkey. Yes, I did. But I didn't mean it like that. But yeah, ignorant monkey. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I won't say anything.
Well, see, as soon as I said it, I didn't mean it in the pejorative. I didn't mean it like that. But it's just, I didn't mean it the way that white people mean it. It's just, he's just stupid, and I just can't.
Jackass.
Oh, go ahead.
Jackass.
Ignorant motherfucker. Go ahead. That part.
So the dateline on the story is California. And of course it's a bunch of well-off, mostly well-to-do, intensely privileged white folks. One of whom threw a menstrual cup full of blood onto the floor of the state assembly, screaming that that was for all the babies that were being poisoned by, wait for it, vaccines. And so...
Wait, did you say as the menstrual... Because when you said menstrual, I thought you said you were saying like minstrel show.
No.
You meant menstrual... You meant as in period, as in monthly, as in... How do you get a whole cup? Oh, my God!
Wait. Time out. No. There are these things that, like, and see, I'm getting schooled on words and stuff. So, I've been recently exposed to the word bougie.
Oh, bougie ass motherfucker! Oh
yeah. Yeah. So, like, your bougie privileged white folks, females, who want to be all sustainable and friendly to the earth. Won't use pads or tampons. They use the cup. Yeah, and I don't even understand the mechanics of it.
I used to use those.
That's what I mean when I said she threw a cup, not as in going next to the door and saying, "Can I borrow a cup of menstrual blood?"
Those things, back when I actually used those things, yes. They are good, and we are on the cusp
of completely fucking up dinner in the Central Time Zone for the late diners, and in the Mountain Time Zone for the early diners. Just want to be clear on that. So one woman did that. They had to evacuate the legislative chamber, and they had to bring in the hazmat suits and all of that shit.
Hazmat. Motherfucker!
Cost the people of California, God only knows how much time and money.
Please tell me she was arrested.
I think she was.
Isn't that because of a terrorist threat?
Briefly detained, I think, maybe given a ticket.
Oh, shit. I love it. I just want to be a white woman. I wish I could have been a white woman when I was sentenced. When everything happened to me about the welfare fraud, because I wouldn't have been convicted. Actually, yeah. So, could I be? Would have been queen for a day.
Hold on. Because it gets worse. Oh, and by the way, I'm reminded that we have also fucked up late breakfast in Sydney, Australia. Damn it. It gets worse because she inspired people. A whole bunch of these privileged goddamn dumber than dirt, stupid people. I mean, I can't. Anti-vaxxers, I hate them. And I don't hate anybody. I hate anti-vaxxers. I goddamn despise them.
I do too.
I mean, I can't. I have searched my mind, and I cannot come up with anything bad enough to happen to them. All right? I mean, just rocks falling, you know, Warner Brothers anvils falling out of the sky. That kind of shit. I can't.
Yep.
So they went marching and rallied outside the governor's office. And then they marched through the corridors of the capital of the state of California.
I've been to Sacramento. I actually been there. I know where they marched.
I wish you did have a hockey puck right now, because you're not going to be all right in about a minute. As they marched through the corridors of the capital of the great state of California, these goddamn stupid motherfucking idiotic fools who would gladly set loose a fucking pandemic over their own sickening privilege, as they marched through the corridors of the capital of the great state of California, they sang, "Wait for it. Here it comes."
Don't you dare say we will not be... No, no, they did not say we will not be moved or we shall overcome.
We shall what? Overcome.
Motherfuckers, what the...
Yeah, I know. This is Thorn in the Side Thursday, though. I mean, you can't plead your shock. We do stories like this on Thorn in the Side Thursday.
See, here's my thing about anti-vaxxers. Okay, motherfuckers, if you don't want to vaccinate your kids, fine. Study your asses at home and homeschool little bastards.
And don't go to goddamn Disneyland.
And don't go to Disneyland. Don't go to the movie. Don't go anywhere. Stay in your fucking hovels or whatever the fuck.
Well, that's the problem. They're not hovels. They're McMansions.
I know, but you know what I mean. It's like, you know, don't go any fucking where. Stay the fuck. Don't go to the grocery store. Because you don't need to go. Look, we live in, look, this is 2019. You don't have to leave your fucking house. You can have everything delivered. We live in a fucking gig economy now. You know, back in the day, the only food that you could have delivered was either pizza or Chinese food, basically. Now, you got Grubhub, you got especially here in L.A., you got Grubhub, you got DoorDash. Just about every fucking restaurant that never delivered before, they don't deliver, because they still don't have delivery service, but just about any restaurant that you can think of that didn't deliver before, they got Grubhub, DoorDash, and whatever, Postmates. All these places.
I almost feel bad because we're not even anywhere into the story.
Oh no! Come on.
When they weren't singing "We Shall Overcome," they were chanting, "No segregation, no discrimination, yes on education for all."
Seriously?
You know, I'm white folks. I'm white folks, and I read that and got outraged. I mean, when I, because immediately my little memory that has the mind movies in it just replayed George Wallace standing in the schoolhouse door, and then it replayed all those National Guardsmen having to escort little school children into schools in Little Rock and Mississippi, and these precious little goddamn toxic snowflakes think they're the same as that?
I mean,
fuck them with a saguaro cactus.
Look, I'm replaying in my memory banks when I was in sixth grade, pulling up at Highlander Road Elementary School and the white people yelling at my school bus telling me to take my black ass back to the ghetto. By the way, I didn't live in the ghetto at the time. I was living in West L.A., that part. On a very nice tree-lined street in the suburbs of West Los Angeles.
They carried a banner, these white women, bleached blonde, that read...
Probably Botox the fuck out
that
with
read,
the implants yeah, and the fake asses.
This is, their banner said, this is the new civil rights movement.
Oh my God. Oh my Jesus.
And it did not go go unnoticed. Assemblywoman Sydney Kamlager Dove, she's a Democrat from Los Angeles, said, "Hey y'all, this is borderline racist." And then she went on and said, "This is misappropriation of a movement that really is not over and proves to be challenging to overcome. The whole conversation around vaccinations is actually one about privilege and opportunity. It's a personal choice. It's a luxury to be able to have a conversation about medical exemptions and about whether or not you think your child should be vaccinated."
That part.
But why would you want the filthy little disease-bearing fucks in your school? Yeah, I said it. Anti-vaxxers' children are filthy little disease-bearing fucks. I mean, aren't they?
Again, I am grateful to motherfucking God. And hold on, oh, Chris is like, wait, did you just say grateful to motherfucking God? Yes, I said that. That my son is a grown ass man that I don't, because you, I get Bob.
If take that, I was, yeah, you can take that up with Ron. I don't know if it counts if it's vocalized as opposed to being in writing.
No, I'm, Ron and I don't come at, Ron might have to come for me on this one. If my son was school age and I had to deal with this shit, I would cold clock a bitch right at this moment, because it's like, no. You're not about to put my child in danger, in jeopardy, because your tribe on the ass decides if you don't want to vaccinate your child, fuck you and fuck the horse you rode in on. Because you're not about to bring your janky ass child up in my child's school. No. We're going to blows on that one. You're not about to put my child at risk because you stupid. Because you're Jenny McCarthy. Because of your dumb prick. Because of your white
prick. Or because you're the governor of Kentucky. Remember, he took his healthy children down and made sure that they caught chicken pox from the neighbors down the street. If that had been anybody who was not a wealthy Republican parent in Kentucky, their children would have been removed from the home.
The home. See, I can't with these people. I can't. No, I can't. See, that's when you see. It's not like you say I can't. No, this is why you. I can't with these people. Did I say that right?
I caught that.
I can't with these people. Because, see, I was just around enough of my folks in the South just to be able to pass stuff like that. I don't know what region that dialect was from, but come the fuck on! I can't. Because, see, like you were saying about, was it yesterday? About, it's just, you know, it's just enough of a minority that makes enough noise that makes it that the rest of us can't have nice things. Isn't that kind of, is that kind of what you said, paraphrasing what you said yesterday?
Yeah.
You know, it's that small group of assholes, the religious right and the anti-vaxxers and the gun nuts and these people, this small minority, this small group of people, but there's some noisy-ass, powerful motherfuckers.
Yeah, I think we've kind of we've stunned Steve in New York a little bit. I just got an email from Steve, so wait a sec. I just tuned in after work. Did I hear that a bunch of cracker-ass anti-vax or fuckwads are claiming the new civil rights mantle? You did hear that, Steve. You did. And the thing is, there's numbers on this. Because the American Public Health Association has studied it as of 2015, and the vast majority of anti-vaxxers, parents of unvaccinated children, are two things: white and wealthy. They didn't say weird, otherwise it would have been WWW. White, wealthy, and weird.
Ooh, that would be cool.
And in California, just like a lot of other states, the ranks of the unvaccinated are going through the roof.
Through the fucking roof! Well, thank God. Thank God we have a governor and a legislature that's, like, not stupid.
Oh, no, I can make it worse. I can make it worse.
Come on!
This onion's got a lot of layers. Because the state of California does not want any pandemics to break out.
That part.
The WWWs, you know, white, wealthy, and weird.
White, wealthy, and weird.
Yeah, they
hashtag WWW.
They unfurled a banner, and the banner said, I may have to pull your fader down a little bit just to cut back on the screaming. The banner, Tracy, read, "Welcome to Calabama."
That's it. I gotta go. That's motherfucker.
Yep.
So now we're the Taliban. We're the Taliban in California.
No. It's Calabama.
Alabama.
You know, where little girls got blown up in a church. That's
okay.
Having to vaccinate your children to keep them from getting diseases is the very same identical thing as having your child blown up in a church.
Okay. Well, you know, on that note, because I do have to get going because I'm actually cooking dinner tonight and I'm going for a walk because seriously, mother, fuck! I hope Michael Harriet, because see, this is one of those, but see, I think he's taking a break because I think he's writing a book. So somebody from the roof has to pick this up because, see, they're going to have a field day with that shit. And I hope there's a leader of this bitch, these bunch, whatever, because this is some crazy-ass shit.
You know I suck at California geography, right?
Yeah, so ask me what. Where are they congregating? The OC or where?
Where is El Cajon?
El Cajon is San Diego County.
Well, nearly 70% of the students there are white, and less than 5% of the 300 students have all their vaccinations.
Say that what? How much?
Less than 5% of the 300 plus students at Valiant Academy of El Cajon, California, less than 5% of the students there have their vaccinations.
Okay, 5%.
And see, it extends beyond the kids themselves. Because as we found out in recent measles outbreaks, if you were vaccinated a bajillion years ago...
Like you and I?
Well, mine didn't take. I got the measles.
That's right.
But if you were vaccinated a bunch of years ago, you may not be immune anymore. And so one of those germ-infested, filthy little anti-vaxxer kids, who, by the way, are blameless because it's not like they can say, "Mommy, I'll be back in a minute. I'm going to go play with my buddy," and sneak off and get their vaccines. But those little unvaccinateds, if it breaks out, they can get a whole shit ton of people sick. I mean, there's a lot of things I could say that I'm not gonna say because it's best I not say them. But when WWW mommy with her new civil rights movement T-shirt, when her refusal to vaccinate her kids gets some adults sick and dead, what do people get to do to her?
That part.
And in point of fact, in a society that considers itself enlightened, how the hell does refusal to vaccinate your children not constitute actionable, legal, medical neglect? Because I have seen that. I have seen that shit happen. I have seen children pulled out of homes until they got their vaccinations. And it needs to happen.
It needs to happen. There's going to be something I was going to say, but I can't remember. But on any note, I'm done.
98% of the students at Community Outreach Academy. Notice these are all academies. That means they're private schools that are run by churches usually. Near Sacramento is Community Outreach Academy. 98% of those students are white, and less than half of the students there are fully vaccinated. And by the way, the woman who threw the menstrual blood, she's facing charges of simple misdemeanor assault.
Okay.
I pissed off the black part of the black community segment of the Horn Family Community Congregation. Let me be clear. A woman named Christina Hildebrand, who's president and founder of A Voice for Choice, has said that not vaccinating one's children is also the same as the gay rights movement and the movement for women's right to vote.
Okay, well, you know what? I'm going to go in my house now and tell my wife that, you know, anti-vaccine is not back, you know, it's up there with our right to get married, my right to my civil rights as a black woman, and our right.
And hey, Jan's right not to, Jan's right not to have a fucking swastika burnt in her yard.
Oh, yeah, that part too. And my right to have a child, a biracial child, and
it gets worse. When the arrest started, a Republican member of the assembly by the name of Devin Mathis, who is from Visalia, he said it was the same thing as parents being separated from children at the border. Then some of these assholes
put on red capes and white hats as though being asked not to make the rest of the state sick is the same as being in The Handmaid's Tale.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay. Because I'm walking, I'm going in my house, and I'm going to hang up the phone now because I can't with you right now.
I know, we're fresh. I know, you just can't. Just can't.
I'm fresh out of Fox right now.
Well, if you see some bleach blonde, Botoxed up, wealthy looking white woman
collagen
wearing a T-shirt that says "New Civil Rights Movement" or "Our Voice, Our Choice" or something like that, and she's not, and she's and it, well, you know, you no, just remember, you don't slap John Voight either, but you are free to go up and look at her and say, "Madam, you are an idiot. You do not belong in polite society.
You've been your disease-ridden child. And on that note, I am gone. I love you guys.
Enjoy dinner.
It's orange muffin and Brussels and roasted Brussels sprouts.
Have a good night, Tracy.
I'm gone.
Bye now. The one and only Tracy, the lady cab driver. I of all the problems we have in West Virginia, that's the one we don't. We're one of the most vaccinated states in the union. Now, it doesn't help much when it comes to having our little children be poisoned with, silica dust and stuff before they're even born. But at least we get our vaccines. God almighty. Steve in New York just simply said, I'm turning in my white card. Jack in Shreveport says, new civil rights movement. Jack says, my puck popped out. Shot it right across the room, Jack did. That's what the duct tape's for, Jack. David in South Carolina stands says, pandemic. So now we can have a pandemic and people will not have health care. That's going to work real good. The school without the vaccines, is this a goddess of irony moment? Jack wants to know. El Cajon, isn't Cajones balls? Always got to have some kind of kinky name. And yeah, El Cajon is about 14 miles east of San Diego, according to Scott in San Diego. I used to live there, he says, when I first moved out here. And I'll bet you Valiant Academy is a Christian private, a.k.a. white school. Albert in Rhode Island asks, how do you think they'd react if their children caught an illness and nearly died because they were not vaccinated? Well, as long as they survived, they'd say, see, the kid didn't need the vaccine after all. I got a big old WTF from Shorty in L.A. What the fuck? That's fucking code. Tracy, you take them low and I'll take them high. Fuck no. That's Calabama. Call Obama equals Tuskegee, Alabama. That's fucking code. Oh my God, Shorty's on to something. The Tuskegee experiments? My God, those ignorant, stupid, benighted fools were equating themselves with the Tuskegee experiments. Jesus jumping Christ. It's against the law in this country to knowingly pass a disease, Shorty adds. I saved that for Thorn in the Side Thursday because that's about as thorny as it gets. God damned ignorant fools. I have thanks to send out. Thanks very kindly to Cat in Ohio. That takes us down to 260. And thanks very kindly to Ralphs
up in Wisconsin. Ralph's sent me a story over on the Tiny Kittens Facebook page. Grandpa Mason's kidneys. Grandpa Mason is a cat. His kidneys failed. He was trapped in 2016, and then it was discovered he had kidney disease. So after he discovered that, that playing with kittens made him feel so much better. I watched the video. It's charming. Ralph says he's spending his last day surrounded by his kittens, and he'll cross the Rainbow Bridge tonight. Oh. And in honor of Grandpa Mason, Ralph says, I'll kick in $20.16. If anyone else wants to do that, it would be great. I guess you'll have to do some ciphering. So, yeah, that takes us down to $239.84. Thank you, Ralphs. And if there are any other cat lovers out there, you might want to go and look. It's bittersweet, to say the least. So at $239.84, Steve in New York has put a $10 challenge on the table. Thank you, Steve. If somebody will match that, he's good for it. On the other hand, Steve said, if their kids died, they'd say it was God's will. Mm-hmm. And Mike in Cascadia, along with Dave in South Carolina, both pointed out, hasn't it been reported that huggable, lovable, cuddleable Pootie has backed the anti-vaxxers here? Another way to divide us. And that's an absolute fact. The Internet Research Agency, as David in South Carolina Stan points out, is driving this one too. Comes straight from Vlad's team. They attack from far left and far right. So there's that. And of course, it uses racial memes to further exacerbate racial tensions. The thing is, though, I have a hard time conceiving the anti-vaxxers as far left. I mean, if the anti-vaxxers are showing up at Bernie rallies or Marianne, okay, they probably are showing up at Marianne Williamson rallies, but if they're showing up at Bernie rallies or Elizabeth Warren rallies or Andrew Yang rallies, okay, maybe they're at Andrew Yang rallies. But if they're showing up at Bernie rallies or Elizabeth Warren rallies, I would hope to honest fuck that those candidates would have the common decency to say, you people are idiots. No, you people are dumber than fuck. And you do not have a civil right to start a damn pandemic in this country. You see, any of those dirty little schools, those dirty little Christian academies, one of these diseases breaks out, it's going to go like wildfire. Of course, we might recall that year before? I think it was last year that California had a big measles outbreak. That was started by a bunch of Christians who went to Disneyland. Then there were the Christians in Texas who started an outbreak because, you know, Jesus said, don't get a vaccine. Jesus didn't have no vaccine. You stupid fuckers. I guess they're too stupid to comprehend, for instance, that from the moment a baby is newborn, the first thing that expresses from a mother's breast is called colostrum. It's not even full-on mother's milk yet. And colostrum is chock full of antibodies. It provides a degree of vaccine-like protection before a baby is old enough to receive a vaccine. But it doesn't last. Its evolution has put it there to give baby a fighting chance at a time when new mama postpartum mama is trying to heal and is subject to possibly being infected herself. God damn. You know, you look at the anti-vaxxers and you wonder if there, you really honest to Jesus wonder if there's any hope for us as a country. You know where they don't have a bunch of goddamned anti-vaxxers? Places where they have a bunch of goddamn diseases. If we get to the point where a broad-spectrum Ebola vaccine is developed, if it is made available in the places where Ebola tends to erupt, people will line up for it. And by the way, just for these insufferably privileged, wealthy, stupid white people, guess who else are anti-vaxxers? You get three and two don't count. That's right. Al-Qaeda. No shit. That's not me just being facetious. You know, that's not like the old, hey, you know who else was anti-vaccine? Hitler. No. Terrorist groups, on more than one occasion, and we're partially at fault for this, the United States has gone in and tried to prevent disease outbreaks through vaccination, but because of the nasty, vile, bloody history of the CIA, it went like wildfire through the community that anybody who got a vaccine had been co-opted by the CIA, so they got killed. The same mindset that's been on display in California is on display there. David in South Carolina refers to them as the unicorn left, as a better description. I don't even like applying the term left to them. They're just, yeah, because there's a big difference between, as I mentioned earlier in the evening, in the program, there's a big difference between workers of the world unite, you have nothing to lose but your chains, that's the left, and me having to get my baby vaccinated is the same as if my baby was being blown up in a church in Birmingham, Alabama in 1963. That ain't left. That's just goddamn dumb. Subject line, you people are dumber than fuck. Scott in San Diego says, they wear it as a badge of honor, Bob. One person's dumber than fuck is another person's differently informed. Oh, yeah, well, that's the same thing as alternative facts. And so it goes, says Scott in San Diego. And for those of you keeping Grandpa Mason, the kitty cat that Ralph's sent me the video of, in your thoughts, Dr. Ferguson's going to be by around 6 p.m. Pacific time to help Grandpa Mason cross the Rainbow Bridge. Now, we've had another join in on Ralph's Grandpa Mason. It's not a challenge, it's just a request. Memorial, the Grandpa Mason Memorial. Thank you. So, oh dear, that, okay, I've got ciphering to do. Let's see, 2 18 77. Thank you kindly. We're taking it down. Hey, by the end of the program, we may be done with everything but today and tomorrow and Monday. Anti-vax, says Jack in Shreveport, is anti-science. Anti-science doesn't come from the left. No, the left is notions like workers should control the means of production. or from each according to his ability to each according to his need. Arguably, yes, universal single-payer health care has a left-ish flavor to it. But that's more like left-center. I mean, the full-on left, we don't even have that in this country. The full-on left is the kind of things that happen when, you know, you have a revolution and you know some people, there are some people that are just never going to give up and they're going to try to destroy whatever progress you make. So, you know, you take care of them because you don't have a little island you can put them on. And you can't do the old Roman thing where you deny them fire and water within 2,000 stadia of the city. I mean, there are some things out there that are really left. But the really, really honest to goodness, no kidding left is nowhere to be found in this country, with the possible exception of some drunken academic arguments in seedy little bars with bad draft beer and cheap liquor and worse weed. And those folks tend to involve themselves, you know, they form study committees and group and blue ribbon panels to determine whether there should be a study committee. And that's how they never get anything done. So we're into the third hour of the program. You want in on the conversation? We've covered it. We got two Jim Dandy topics on the table this evening, namely one being the GM strike and its ramifications, and two, these godforsaken anti-vaxxers in California who are dumber in the head than a hog is in the ass. And hogs are real dumb in the ass, in case anybody's wondering. Anatole in the chat room noting, those people are dumber than a bag of wet hamsters. Sheesh. Apparently, and we probably should get around to this unless somebody else wants to discuss something else. We're wide open on the stress line. That, of course, is 844-843-4676. And then Skype to Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn. We need to get around to the whistleblower story because there is Darlene just sent me a link to the latest on it. Information is dribbling out ever so sparsely. Apparently, the whistleblower complaint involves Ukraine. And if that's the case, then it's a pretty good guess that the whistleblower complaint involves either Mike Pence or Donald Trump or both of them and their desperate attempt to get the Ukrainian government to do a sleaze job on poor old Joe Biden. Again, there was a closed door hearing. Little came out of it except for people like Jackie Speier, a California Democrat from San Mateo County, I believe, who said that she would say, because this was all confidential. She said it's a very grave situation. The hearing went on for 5 hours today. The Inspector General of the Intelligence Community showed up, but would not hand over information about the whistleblower in question. She described the IG as answering some questions, not on the specific subject matter, but it's deeply troubling, and said that it appears there's been a violation of the law by the Trump regime. But when I was reading up on this earlier, prior to airtime, something occurred to me. Now, we're talking about the House Intel Committee, right? Chaired presently by Adam Schiff. But before the elections of 2018 and the Blue Wave, that committee was chaired by Devin Nunes, who we all recall went running tattling with information. He was, for all intents and purposes, a mole for the Trump regime. And it was a full committee hearing behind closed doors those 5 hours this afternoon. But on the one hand, it's easy to say, well, you know, this is just another case of another member of the executive branch refusing to follow the law. But what if? What if, with people like Devin Nunes and various and sundry other un-American members of the Republican Party who are part of that committee, what if the IG knew that the instant he said anything, it would be in Donald Trump's ear because those people can't keep their godforsaken mouths closed? What if that's the motivation? We're rapidly approaching Pentagon Papers territory. We're rapidly approaching a situation in which it is understood that slightly less than one half of the House of Representatives cannot be trusted with sensitive information because they hold greater loyalty to Julius Geiser than they hold to their oath to the Constitution itself. What if that's the case? What if that's the case? Is that outside the realm of possibility? Because it seems downright likely to me. I mean, you want to know how sleazy they are? Well, earlier today, former Republican House Intel Chair Daryl Issa was supposed to have a Senate confirmation hearing, which would have been a slam dunk. But over in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, the chair there is an Idaho Republican by the name of Jim Risch. Issa had been tagged by the Chlamydia Claudius to head the Trade and Development Agency. But Senator Risch said they were going to indefinitely delay his confirmation hearing because former Representative Issa could not pass the background check. All that was said was that Issa had problematic classified information contained in his background check. Well, we do know that Daryl Issa has, in his past, damn near, if not outright, felonious conduct. And you'll recall that Daryl Issa spent day in and day out going hammer and tongs at the Obama administration over things that weren't even things. Senator Risch and Senator Menendez both asked for the background check to be released by the White House The White House, of course, said, fuck off. And Risch, instead of just outright tanking the nomination, said there won't be another hearing vote until all members of the committee have read the background documents. And yet, dig this, ISA is thinking about running for Congress again. We are in the undiscovered country. Wow. This... If we and I don't know how you get to the bottom of it. How can I mean, even if you're Adam Schiff and you try to do an end run on the disloyal, anti-constitutional Republicans on your committee, how do you guarantee the safety of the whistleblower? And apparently the whistleblower, him or herself, is actually a Trump appointee. Sort that one out. Wow. But, you know, what? Have the sergeant at arms provide security round the clock? That only works if they never leave the Capitol grounds. Capitol Police has jurisdiction all around the Capitol and up into some of the neighborhoods, but they're not really equipped for this kind of thing. Or is it one of those things where you hope for the best, that full disclosure out in the middle, in broad daylight, actually serves as a protectant? That's why I said we're getting close to Pentagon Papers territory. You might recall Senator Mike Gravel read the Pentagon Papers into the record in the Senate of the United States. You might also recall that the genesis of Watergate was the break-in at the psychiatrist's office for Daniel Ellsberg, trying to dig up filth on him to discredit him for having leaked, whistleblown the Pentagon Papers. And that two-bit piece of burglary, well, that was enough to take down a president in his second term. Curiouser and curiouser, said Alice. So what did I say, 2-18-77? To finish the evening? 1877 gets us down to the actually having taken care of Monday, Tuesday, and yesterday, and leaves us tomorrow, today, and Monday. But let's run over and check in with Scott, not far from El Cajon.
That's right. El Cajon, in Spanish, as I recall, means either the either the box or the jewel. I forget which. I think it's the box.
Cajones, the jewels, the family jewels.
Yeah, it's in kind of a canyon. and hotter than blazes in the summer, Bob. That's one of the reasons I got the fuck out of there. Well, even hotter is the place just a little further east, a city called Santee, S-A-N-T-E-E. And wait a minute, hold on a second. God, you'd think I was still a smoker the way I get these little froggy throats. I need to look up some old remedies.
Well, wait. This is one of those fun word things. So, you know, recently I read the entire Philip Marlowe, Raymond Chandler canon.
Oh, wow.
Well, the very last novel is one called Playback. And it finds him leaving his Los Angeles usual haunts and going down to do some investigating in San Diego. And when it comes to like little towns, though, he uses fake names for them. For instance, Santa Monica becomes Bay City.
Okay.
And when you said,
which kind of makes sense.
And when you said El Cajon means jewel, well, there's a little kind of touristy town where a lot of the action takes place that he refers to as Esmeralda.
Yeah.
Esmeralda's
Esmeralda's
not far word-wise from Emerald, which is a jewel. So I wonder if Esmeralda in Playback is El Cajon. Is it touristy, or was it once touristy?
Jesus. Well, let me put it this way. It's about, I think it's about 14 miles east of here. It's in the inland part of San Diego County. It's hotter than hell because it's like in a little canyon sort of thing. And obviously, the further away you get from the coastal area, the hotter it's going to get in the summer. Touristy? No, I it's a lot of things El Cajon is, but I wouldn't say touristy is one of them. There is a little museum. I mean, it's got a history in terms of, you know, and they have an annual parade or something for the El Cajon pioneers or whoever the fuck settled the place. But even hotter is just east of El Cajon. Well, actually, it's where I first lived when I moved out here for about 8 months. A little city called Santee, S-A-N-T-E-E. And I finally had to break down and get an air conditioner because I was sharing a house with a right-wing lawyer guy, okay, in Santee. And my first summer here was almost intolerable for me. At the time, I had two cockatiels and Michi, the calico cat. And I finally had to get an air conditioner just for their sake. But then El Cajon is not much cooler. I'm trying to think what El Cajon is known for something, but I'll be damned if I can recall what it is. For back in the 80s, it was a big meth capital. Methamphetamine capital here in the San Diego area. And it's kind of, it's still to this day, El Cajon is still kind of sketchy. I don't usually go out that way unless I absolutely have to. There are a lot of trailer parks in Santee and El Cajon, or there were back when, 20 years ago when I was first living out that way.
Okay, yeah. Wikipedia is saying it means the box or the drawer. So kind of a box canyon kind of thing, probably.
Yeah. You mentioned Philip Marlowe. Now, weren't there a couple of films based on his books?
Oh, lots.
That Bogart, there was one with Bogart and Bacall, as I recall. I can't think of the one that I've got in mind. But I always confuse Marlowe with
Sam Spade,
the guy who wrote From Here to From Here to Eternity, who also wrote, I've got the book in the other room and I can't remember it. And there was a movie based on it. It's the one, Double Indemnity, which is one of the best fucking movies, film noir movies that you're ever going to see. Edward G. Robinson, Fred McMurray, Barbara Stanwyck. Oh, God. But, yeah, I must brush up on my Marlowe, because those Double Indemnity and whichever Marlowe book resulted in the film that had Bogart and Bacall, both of those writers, they painted pictures for your mind's eye they were almost unduplicatable in terms of a visual medium. Because obviously in radio and in old time radio and in literature, your mind always conjures up the scenery and the character features and the action way better than even a top Hollywood director could. But so Esmeralda.
I just looked it up. Esmeralda is La Jolla.
Oh, La Jolla. Well, isn't it called the Jewel? La Jolla itself, isn't it the Jewel of San Diego? Maybe that's what I'm thinking for Jewel. And it was an artist's colony back in the, 20s and 30s and all. La Jolla was. There's still, to this day, it's a very ritzy area. And if I could live anywhere else in this area, I wouldn't mind living up there. But the public transportation is currently iffy, although we're getting the trolley system up there in about 2.5 years. So we'll see how that goes. Well, that's not where I called, is it? Or is it?
No, it's not. And Billable Rick says you're actually thinking about the Maltese Falcon.
Maltese Falcon, yes. Another great film.
Yeah, that's Dashiell Hammett, and that's Sam Spade.
Okay, well, then I'm getting three of them mixed up. James N. Cain, Philip Marlowe, and Dashiell Hammett.
Well, Dashiell
Hammett. You know what I saw?
Dashiell Hammett is the author, lived in San Francisco. Dashiell Hammett is San Francisco noir. Raymond Chandler is L.A. Southern California noir.
Okay. You know what I watched the other night, speaking of writers of that ilk? The other night on Amazon Prime. It's free again for subscribers, this particular film. It, from a few years ago, a documentary about Dalton Trumbo. God, that poor man and his family and the blacklist of the 40s and 50s. And here's the other day, that fucker Lewandowski showed nothing but contempt for a House panel on Capitol Hill. What has happened to the contempt of Congress rules, Bob? In the 50s, late 40s, early 50s, Dalton Trumbo was caught up in this Red Scare and was what you would call an unfriendly witness when he was called, along with others, to the House Un-American Activities Committee, which is a now defunct, thank God, House panel, rooting out those commies under every bed. And he was cited for contempt. He went to trial on that basis, was convicted, and went to fucking federal prison for a couple of years, and had his career ruined. He had to hire people to work as fronts. In other words, he would write the material, the screenplay or the teleplay. The front on his behalf, secretly, would present it to the Hollywood or the television producers, and they would get the accolade if they'd won an Emmy or an Oscar, which was the case in a film called The Brave One, The writing credit went to a guy named Robert Rich, I believe was the name. And he won the fucking Oscar for the best screenplay. And nobody showed up to claim the award. And if you remember, in the 70s, late 70s, I guess, Woody Allen, he didn't direct it, but he starred in a film called The Front, which for those who are not familiar with this practice that people had to resort to, actually, in a funny way, there are light moments in the film, being a Woody Allen vehicle, and Zero Mostel is in it, gives a stellar performance. Herschel Bernardi is one of the actors in it. And most of the people associated with The Front, the movie, were themselves blacklisted years ago. So if you can find that, watch it, and it'll give you some history of what we're talking about. But anyway, getting back to Lewandowski.
Well, hold on. Let's remember one
why
thing.
Was
there's a
right,
rule. No, there's a rule at
right,
work here, Scott. And that rule IOKIYAR. All right. That was a Republican House dealing with a left witness, in which case they barbecue his ass in molasses. All right.
Being Trumbo. Yeah.
This is a Democratic House dealing with a Republican witness, and IOKIYAR.
So the contempt rules never went away. People are still cited with contempt charges.
This committee may very well cite him with contempt. It is under contemplation. Nancy Pelosi said either today or yesterday she would have done it on the spot. And if it had been done on the spot, it would have been delightful because Gerald Nadler would have been able to say, Sergeant at Arms, please take the witness into custody and take him down to the jail in the basement of the Capitol.
Yeah, because Lewandowski would have been on their turf.
And he would have, all he would have had to do was say, I am ready to come back and testify fully and truthfully and answer your questions. Because, you see, I've been instructed by the White House not to answer questions regarding any personal conversations with Donald Trump is bullshit because there is no privilege attached. Executive privilege,
right.
We must understand, executive privilege attaches to the presidency, not the person who is president, okay? It's a distinction that makes a difference. And it applies to things that the president does as the president. Okay, Corey Lewandowski is not and never was a member of this administration. As such, there is no claim of executive privilege that may be made with a straight face. But because Bill Barr, who, by the way, once endorsed a book saying that campus rape was a hoax, just off to the side there.
Jesus.
Because Bill Barr is the Attorney General is in charge of prosecutions of contempt of Congress. Because the Congress, while it holds hearings, is not a judicial body that is capable of assessing guilt or innocence. Even in the case of impeachment, when tried in the Senate, it's not guilt or innocence, it is removal or stay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those checks and balances are bright lines that are very clearly delineated. So Bill Barr has to do it.
And
Barr
that ain't gonna happen.
Ain't gonna do it.
Yeah. Well, and here, you know, people, now this is the difference between today and the era of the Watergate hearings, okay? And you can find all of the gavel-to-gavel Watergate hearings and the House Judiciary impeachment hearings from 73, 74 online. I forget the link, but I've sent it to you in the past. I'll post it on your Facebook feed for those who want to sit for hours on end. Hosted, by the way, the coverage of Watergate, hosted by a very young McNeil and Lehrer. Actually, the PBS newscast, the evening news hour, which was only a half hour when it started, actually evolved from this special Watergate coverage with McNeil and Lehrer. But that's another story. If you sit and watch the parade, I mean, literal parade of administration and government witnesses who came to testify before Sam Ervin's Senate Watergate panel in 73, they were invited, they were subpoenaed to come, and they came. And most of them testified without perjuring themselves or leaving anything out. You know, today's crop of presidential advisors and errand runners and apologists and enablers, you can't even get them to come to the hearing. They laugh at our very system of government. They scoff at it. They regard it not, basically. And as for ISA, God damn, that crazy so-and-so was a long-running congressman from his district was like southern Orange County and parts of northern San Diego County. So I'm well familiar with his antics, okay? And you know whose seat he's running for if he does run for the Congress again?
Whose?
There's a guy in Congress, Duncan Hunter, who got the seat from his daddy. His daddy, Duncan Hunter.
Right, and then Duncan Hunter's the one who threw his wife under the bus.
Yeah. And he's supposedly going to go on trial in January. That's the current timeline, anyway. And for misusing campaign funds for personal use and all manner of nefarious shit. It would be funny almost if it weren't so
unfunny.
Heartbreakingly sad. Yeah, unfunny. But I mean, it's heartbreakingly sad. You know, it's one thing for people to not do right because they're either impaired in some way or don't know any better or don't think it through, but to deliberately poke wooden sticks into the spokes of our system, and that's just the nickel and dime stuff. Then you ratchet it up to the possibility, the very distinct possibility, that a foreign power, a.k.a. the former Soviet Union, a.k.a. Putin and his pals, monkeyed with our very election, our national election in 2016, which helped bring us Trump on the basis of 77,400 fucking votes in three states, formerly blue. That goes way beyond poking a stick into the spokes of our system. That's treasonous. That's truly un-American.
Well, just to give you a little bit of an update.
God, I'm wound up today, and I didn't mean to be.
Well, this what drives us crazy is this stuff is dripping and drabbing out. And it is maddening from a news standpoint. So now we apparently know that, yes, it's Ukraine. Yes, it's the attempt to slime Joe Biden. And he admitted it. This is another one of those moments where it may be that the guy who takes down Nitwit Nero is someone equally as stupid, and that is Rudy Giuliani.
Oh, God, here we go.
Remember Rudy Giuliani?
Who, by the way, is embarking on his second or third or fourth divorce, I believe I read the other day.
Something like that. But remember, Rudy Giuliani was sent to Ukraine to dig dirt. Now, add into that something that David in South Carolina just sent from Julia Davis on Twitter. Russia's state TV names Joe Biden as Trump's most dangerous rival. Host Dmitry Kislyov says Trump should keep digging in Ukraine for, quote, the sweetest compromat of all, proving that Ukraine, not Russia, interfered in the U.S. election. That was 4 days ago.
Say that again. I was coughing on pause here.
Trump, should keep digging in Ukraine for the sweetest compromat of all, proving that Ukraine, not Russia, interfered in the U.S. elections.
And who is saying that?
Dmitry Kislyov on Russian state TV.
Jesus.
And see, they've been fed information. They've been fed information from Russia about Ukraine because, of course, Russia is at war with Ukraine. These are puzzle pieces that fit together rather nicely, really.
Yeah.
So,
and you know, the disheartening thing is, I'm pretty well informed as things go, but even I miss I'm not as on top of it as you are, obviously. The people out there, even the people on our side, a lot of them, they're the electorate. I'm talking about not the activists and the folks who blog and all of that, but I'm just talking about the people who are going to vote in the primaries in early 2020, and then in the general election in November of 2020. They don't follow this stuff the way you do or Malloy or the other people in media and who blog and who write. Okay. So they catch about every third word in terms of, if they catch anything at all, in terms of all of these under-the-surface things that bubble up from time to time, and we get a new little drip or drab or chunk of information, And then, on the other side, the people who don't vote with us, the only world that they know is the world according to Fox News or Mark Levin, or Lars Larson, or any number of radio or TV talkers who are parroting the party line, literally. Okay, so they're like off in la la land in terms of knowing what the deal is. I get this little update on my email every day. I don't know, it's not a group, it's like a website called Quora, Q-U-O-R-A, I believe is the spelling.
Yeah, I'm familiar with
it. And people submit questions, and then people answer questions. Well, somebody asked the question that showed up on my inbox, why do some people refer to Trump as a liar? So I figured, well, this is a no-brainer, I can answer this one in my sleep. So my answer was,
because he is
probably because they compare what he says with the established, fully verified public record. And I put underneath, if the term liar puts you off, do what I do. Call him consistently guilty of engaging in a seemingly endless series of terminological inexactitudes, which is a nice way of saying the same thing. He's a lion sack.
Yeah. 12,000 plus times over.
Yeah. I don't know if Tracy is still listening as she's, wielding a mean spatula or whatever, a utensil in her kitchen. But whenever people willingly or otherwise misunderstand what you're trying to say, if they misinterpret what you're saying, your fallback phrase is this: I know you think you understood what I said, but what you heard is not what I meant. And they'll get a look on their face like a hound dog trying to work out a math problem, you know, and then smile, nod gently.
While passing a peach pit, yes.
So, well, yes, while passing a peach pit. But otherwise, Bob, things are just tickety-boo here in the land of the free and the home of the lawfare.
Yeah,
you know?
All things being equal, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
Yeah. Other than that, Jackie, what did you think of the parade? You know, you got to laugh to keep from crying in today's world.
It's like something Ron and Raleigh just wrote a few minutes ago. Well, hell, Bob, just because a man has a little Grand Theft Auto in his background shouldn't mean he can't hold high elective or appointed positions, you know, in regard to their
lives. Oh, that's right. Didn't he build his fortune on radar machines, radar detection devices?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he did.
I think it was something called Viper.
Yeah, that rings a bell.
Not the
these
Dodge.
These anti-vaxxers.
Not the Dodge sports car.
No. Yeah. You earlier were talking about the anti-vaxxers. Here's the irony there. The goddess of irony never sleeps. A lot of these religious, so-called religious believers who disobeyed the government, doesn't their own Bible, New Testament and Old, exhort them to subject themselves to the civil authorities? Because God
it's
put
right
those
there.
Authorities. Yeah. Even I know that, heathen that I am, Bob. Come on.
I understand.
But it's going to get screwier. It's going to get screwier.
What I keep saying. It's going to get every day that passes is going to be a day that it was slightly less weird than the next one that dawns. There aren't going to be any ordinary days between now and January the 20th, 2021. We may as well get used to that.
Well, we have passed through that portal. That we will never again see ordinary days after Trump. After the 2016 election cycle, we're through the looking glass, literally. You can expect to see a caterpillar sitting on a stump sucking on a hookah before it's all over. And the Queen of Hearts, or whoever it was, that was...
No, I know.
I just and how do you stand it? I couldn't get out of bed if I had to do what you do day in and day out.
Well, for that, I will quote the late, great Dr. Hunter S. Thompson.
Well, I know where you're going, too.
I am loath to recommend the use of hard drugs and alcohol, but it's always worked for me.
Yeah. Well, and the other
but
one
that, you know, that's just a, that's a flippant little joke. No, I do it. I can stand it because this is my training. Okay. It's like, not that I'm anything. It's like asking a surgeon, how can you stand having your hands in somebody's guts? Well, it's what I was trained to do. And I'm an information junkie. Because it's the same reason I love archaeology. It's all a puzzle. You know, and I don't know, maybe at some point in time I'm going to become Russell Crowe in A Beautiful Mind, sitting there with all those goddamn things with the strings and the articles and, you know, highlights for children connected to The Economist, connected to Foreign Policy Magazine, connected to Reader's Digest, and I'll just be gone then. But so far, no.
I recall that scene, and I'm thinking, poor Bob.
But I,
this is what he's got to look forward to.
And I feel, well, you know, as weird as it is, and as depressing as it can be, Scott, it's also, it's not like my father's generation where he had his entire life rewritten for him on December 7th, 1941.
It's not like being a grown-up on November 22nd, 1963. But I am at least aware that I am living through quite possibly the weirdest part of American history that has come to us thus far. If I'm going to go for a historical analogy, all of us are alive during a time when the question is open as to whether or not our deliberately formed representative democracy, Republican form of government, will survive. It's like that quote from the Gettysburg Address. Now we are engaged in a great civil war to see whether this nation or any nation so constituted can long survive.
Well, Bob, I can attest, because I know that I'm about, 7-8 years older than you are. And I have the benefit of having become aware and paying attention in my very young years. I would say from the age of 5 on, I was paying at least some attention to the world around me. And that I chalked that up simply on two things: having grown up just outside of D.C. in the 60s and having an afternoon paper route when I was 9 or 10 years old. You know, because I didn't just throw those papers into the bushes or up onto the roof. I read the Washington Daily News, a little afternoon tabloid rag that it was. And later, I graduated to the Post. Those two things got me aware at an early age. And I just turned 65 a few months ago. And I can assert to you, I can testify without fear of being called a liar, we have never lived in times like this before.
No.
There have been aspects and elements of some of what we're going through, but never.
Right. Because history, Scott, I can look at if this thing with Ukraine shapes up the way it looks like it's gonna, because I love history and have bothered to learn some of it, I can go, Jamie Wilkinson, been here. Because I've talked about it on a number of occasions. That is as dirty a moment in American history as has ever existed, and it happened before the country was 25 years old. General James Wilkinson was a veteran of the Revolution. He had risen to the rank of general. He was put in charge of all the American forces west of the Mississippi, and was so situated at the time that Thomas Jefferson became president and Aaron Burr became vice president. And all the bad blood that was generated in that election, what with it being thrown into the House and everything.
Yeah.
Well, during the whole time, James Wilkinson was an agent in the pay of the Spanish crown. He was headquartered either at Natchez or New Orleans, and he got it, and he made the long walk to the mailbox every month and picked up a check from the King of Spain in exchange for telling them everything that the United States was doing or thinking about doing. And here's the funny, and here's where it gets interesting. It was largely buried, but upon being revived, it has been described by historians as the darkest and most and dirtiest moment in American history. It has been described as sufficient to have brought the young nation to its knees. And the thing is, there is reason to think that Thomas Jefferson was aware of it and let it go on, and waited until he could use it as part of his blood vendetta against Aaron Burr. Aaron Burr is the American Satan, but the problem is, he may not be. The American Satan may have been Thomas Jefferson, who was willing to let the young republic be put in peril
in order to try to fulfill a vendetta, because James Wilkinson becomes the key witness in the treason trial for his very life of Aaron Burr. And Wilkinson, by testimony, perjured himself from home to Rome.
Is there any way to, is there a source like a book or articles where one can
start with Wikipedia? Look up James Wilkinson, look up Wilkinson Affair.
I wonder, I've never read, or I may have read one of Gore Vidal's historic novels.
Well, he touches on all that shit in Burr.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say that might have it. But then again, I'm not much of a novel reader.
But that's a novel worth reading because Vidal did such meticulous research. Listen, I got to get out of here, Scott, but thanks.
All right, Bob. Take care, and my best to you, of course, and Agnes, and the family, and the Horn family, and to anybody else who's out there, even Agent Fred. I hope Agent Fred has his work cut out for him and botches everything that he tries to lay his hand on.
And
my wish for Agent Fred.
And hey to all the filthy little anti-vaxxers in El Cajon.
Well, that's yet another reason I don't go out there. It's sketchy in places, and you never know what you're going to catch. So the doctor says, well, you don't have to cut that off. It's going to fall off in 10 seconds. Anyway, take care. Have a good day.
Doctor, it hurts when I do this. Yeah, don't do that. Later, Scott.
All right.
And on the way out the door, a last note from Lady B. Dreams and blackface, the subject line. I have trouble getting to sleep, Lady B says. Have to dope myself up, always have. God help me if I wake up and have to take another pill. I'm working on it, but it's an ongoing battle. As far as racism goes, this flap about Justin Trudeau in blackface strikes me as disingenuous. I'm not Canadian, so any beef they have with him is not my own. If you don't like him, don't vote for him. It's that simple. But honestly, there are thousands of white folks out there who did this shit in the past without a second thought. Hopefully that reign of ignorance is over. You know better now. When you know better, you do better. So unless there are picks, shut the fuck up and don't do it again. Okay, so let's say you had a blackface incident in the past that you're ashamed of. Here's your absolution, at least from me. If you were portraying a movie or video character, move on and never do it again. If you played Othello in a high school or theater play, you're forgiven. You or the producer didn't know better. Now you do. Don't do it again, and next time chip in and hire a black actor. You'll learn something and be a better person for it. It's a win-win situation. And ask yourself this question. Have you ever seen a black person whiten their face to play Captain America or Captain Jean-Luc Picard? Yes, I know about the movie White Chicks and the Eddie Murphy Saturday Night Live skit. It's called Irony, and it was meant for you. But we'd look silly. People would be offended. So why would you darken your skin to play Geordie LaForge or Black Panther? A banana clip over the eyes or a Black Panther costume will let us know who you are. If you don't think you can look convincing enough, find another character to be. God knows white folks have hundreds of heroes to choose from. However, that shit that female senator from Alabama did as part of a play or costume party tradition, at Auburn University, I might add, that was deliberate and malicious. Her actions were purposeful and dripped with racism. That's exactly why she did it. She wanted to mock blacks. She had hate in her heart. That makes her actions evil. So as far as the beef with Trudeau and blackface goes, I know we tend to defend those we like and call out those we don't. But honest to Christ, folks, stop trying to call everybody out in order to be politically correct. It's sociopathic and screams that you're desperate for attention. It makes me question your motives and makes your actions even worse. If you see a person using blackface as a deliberate, malicious, and harmful way to push a narrative or agenda, then by all means, call that motherfucker out. Post their photograph like you're getting paid to hang show bills. Otherwise, do better for yourself and keep your own closets locked. God knows you may have a bone or two in there that you might want to keep hidden. Signed, Lady B. Lady B distills issues
Well, kind of the way that sour mash gets distilled into fine, fine liquor. It is a purified form, a rarefied form of the original. So thank you for that, Lady B. I'm just trying to imagine me showing up in a Black Panther suit and calling myself Pink Panther. I thought it was funny at the time. And thanks to Ralphs. Ralphs has taken us down to $200. So that means tomorrow's $400 and the finish in the whole month is $6. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you so much. Friday on the front porch tomorrow. I'm looking forward to a big time. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air with your kind contributions and your subscriptions. Tomorrow is the last day of Ralphs's new subscriber challenge. Five new subscribers, and it ends tomorrow. Five new subscribers at $10 a piece could get their subscriptions doubled. Think about it. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program, however you so do. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Celebrating 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.